Hello and welcome to The Art of the Punt. Our first artist that we're going to speak to is Kingsley Bartholomew. Kings, welcome.
Thank you. I've never been called an artist before.
Well, it's here for first. Where did the love of the punt start for you?
When I was born. No, I used to go up to the TAB a lot with my parents, my family. On a Saturday, we'd go to the TAB. I went to high school up at Gosford, and the races every second Thursday were at Gosford. So I wouldn't do sport. I'd just head straight to the racetrack, to the Gosford races. So as a kid, I was around the races a lot. I was around the punt a lot. My brother Sean's 5 years older than me. I'd go to the track with him. So I was around it a lot and just fell in love with it as well. But not only that, after I left school, I couldn't get a job doing anything else. So I gravitated towards the racetrack, and that's where I really fell in love with it.
So it was the sort of the attraction of the horses and the excitement, or was it the betting side of things?
No, just the betting. It was just always the betting. I mean, I love the horses, but it's always, for me, it's always about the betting. It's always about the markets. I remember going to the track to Sydney when I was like, you know, 13, 14, 15, and being in awe of bookies like Roger Manning and Dominic Byrne and Mark Reed, and just watching them. Eric Conlon would be riding the tickets so fast you couldn't keep up, and I was, you know, had stars in my eyes. So it was always about the betting for me, and watching the punters, you know, what they backed and how big they bet and all that sort of thing. So that's where the love really came from.
So you mentioned then you got a job on a racetrack working for bookmakers. How did that come about?
Through Sean. So he was working for Warren Woodcock at the time, the late Warren Woodcock Senior. And I started there when I was 17, sort of 18, clerking. Then I worked for Sean. Then I was back to Warren. Then I worked for another couple of bookies. I'd go out to the dogs and work at night, earning my 120. So I was doing dogs, I was doing trots, I was doing races. Between about 18 and 23, I was earning, you know, 100 to 150 a meeting. So I was getting sort of 800 cash every week. I'd be betting with that all the time as well. So it was a great, great lifestyle for a kid growing up. I loved it.
There was a series a couple of years ago on the ABC, which featured you and your brother. What were those sort of times like when you were then not just clerking, but then going out as in a partnership with your brother?
Yeah, well, I was just working for him. It was his joint, and the ABC was his idea completely. I was only 18, 19, incredibly shy. I wouldn't have said one word on that. I said, I'll be in the corner, but I won't say one word. So you'll see me running around the betting ring, but you won't see me interviewed in that one. But I mean, they were great times. He was betting up, and you know, I was doing the ground for him then. So I'd be watching the odds, and you know, telephones just came in. So I'd be answering the telephones, Mark Reed, and he had some other big punters sort of betting on the phone. So I'd be handling a lot of money. I'd be betting back. I'd be trading the money a lot back then, which is an art that's really lost nowadays. But my job, predominantly I started on the, I was doing the ground, but I did start on the bag, taking the money. And then I was generally doing the ground, watching the prices and calling out to him, number two's shortening, you know, such and such is backing this, bring it in, trying to lay things at the right price type thing. It was good fun.
How big were the bets at that stage? Like, what sort of numbers were you turning over?
Well, all the money was on track then, so it was sort of, it was in the tens of thousands, sort of. We'd hold sort of 50 on some races. Midweeks were big too. Like, you'd hold 10, 20, 30,000 on a midweek race. We were in the outer as well, so the rails bookies were betting a lot bigger. But back then, the outer was very, very strong. You'd hold sort of, you know, you could get on to win 100,000 in the outer. And then there was a ledger in some meetings as well, which is right out the back. But just different times, and it was no problem getting any money down. That all bet to win. Nowadays, the limits are 1,000, 2,000. Back then, they were 5,000 sort of minimum. The outer was 3,000. But a lot of bookies had bet bigger. They bet you to win 10 or 20,000 if they didn't like horses. So there was no limit to how big you could bet, really.
So how did you then transition from being basically a clerk for your brother and working for Sean to then thinking, I can make a fist of this myself?
Yeah, it was just a gradual transition. Sean stopped bookmaking. I went back to work for Warren for a while. Then I started to handle a bit of money on track. I'd had people ringing me, and I was punting as well at the same time. So I had money coming through me. I'd be on the phone and putting a lot of money back through the ring, whether it be someone ringing me from Melbourne or someone sort of from Queensland. I had 2, 3, 4 people that I'd be putting money on for. And they were quite smart punters as well, so I'd be following their money quite a bit. From there, I did that for a year or two, which was a lot of fun as well, just putting money on in the ring, big money. My break really came. I'd get up to have about 40,000, then I'd knock the 40,000 off, then I'd get to 40,000, then I'd knock it off. I did that about 2 or 3 times. But my sort of break, I guess, came when I hit 2 superfectas in 1 week. The superfecta back then was pick first 6. So you had to pick the first six in order. And there was a big carryover one night at Canterbury, and I think, I can't remember what the carryover was, it was in the hundreds of thousands. And a team of us on track sort of put money in. I might have put five thousand sort of in. I can't remember the exact amounts, but to cut a long story short, I won about 200,000 hitting two superfectas in 1 week. And that then gave me the kick. And after that, I sort of never looked back.
So were you using your own form at that stage? Were you working with other people? Where were you sort of driving your analysis from?
I was watching markets. And once again, I had people on the phone. I was relying more so on other people's form. My brother later on started writing a model. He's very good at statistics and statistical analysis, and started writing a model, which we then bet off together. And it was a very basic model at the start, and then slowly built up. So it was a combination of a lot of things that was just gradually turning over money and continually learning and continually trying to get better and continually getting used to sort of betting in larger numbers, setting rules for myself and setting rules around staking and making a lot of mistakes along the way, but not doing it at too big a level to sort of knock myself back out of play again.
So then transitioning from someone who was, like you say, following those money moves and taking information from other people to then doing it yourself, how did you make that leap?
It was gradual. So when I was at the track and I was betting in telephone numbers, I was still going out and working at the Dogs because I knew I might knock myself out of play. I might need the 121 days. So yeah. It was just all very gradual, and slowly building a bank. You don't sort of get there overnight type thing. It's just about, you know, sticking to your rules, getting your form sort of better constantly as well, and just building.
The establishment of the Wolf Den, which you are now, which you've created with a group of like-minded friends and associates to build a punting community. How did that come about?
Well, I've been punting now for 25 years, so we just wanted to do something different because the market, what I was talking about before on track, it was so exciting and so fun. For the last sort of 10 years, I've been sitting in front of a computer betting to win 1,000, 2,000 with 20, 30 bookies, and it might sound silly, but it becomes very monotonous. It becomes a bit boring. The marketplace now is quite boring. So we just wanted to do something different. I wanted to challenge myself. I wanted to build a business. And more so, what I wanted to do is try and recreate the betting ring in a way where we have all these different opinions coming in. And also a place where people can learn, they can come on, they can chat to me, they can chat to Ridge, they can chat to other like-minded people in a safe space where they can learn.
You've grown up in New South Wales, been based in Sydney. Has Sydney always been the predominant focus of your punting, or do you sort of
bet everywhere? Yeah, I bet everywhere. I bet throughout Australia sort of for the last, 20 years or something like that. Better in the UK for a while, just through Betfair. Do a little bit of betting in Hong Kong, fixed odds as well. So it's predominantly throughout Australia, though. Fixed odds is what I sort of gravitate towards.
Welcome back to The Art of the Punt, chatting with Kingsley Bartholomew. And you've made note of five key points that you believe are very important to be successful at the punt. The first of those is identifying your edge. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so firstly, these aren't just for professional punters. These are for, you know, hobby punters or anyone who sort of wants to be serious about their punting. And it's also for investing as well. If you're investing on stock market, I think these five pillars are very essential. So identify your edge is the first one that I've come up with. Like, what is an edge? So an edge can be anything from looking at horses in the parade yard. It might be doing videos. It might be really good at modelling. It might be, you're good at statistics. It might be following your tips, for example, you know, on a Saturday, because I think you're a good judge. Or like, what is your edge? Why are you going to win when 99% of people lose? You have to understand why. What's the difference that you're going to make, sort of thing.
Is that, say, it's not an easy thing for people to grasp, because the majority of punters who are recreational punters, they might watch races only on a Saturday. They'll watch metro racing, you know, Sydney, Melbourne. And the edge in those races and those markets is quite minimal compared to some other aspects of the betting market when you're up against the professional teams, people like yourself, because it's not easy for those that are just sort of doing it recreationally to go up against the big teams.
No, it's not bloody easy at all. It's in fact hard. But by edge, I mean, how do you pick the horses you're going to back?
Yeah.
So how do you like when you're doing the Ford? What's your edge, do you
think,
for example?
Well, I like trialers. I like watching the trials, and I like sort of honing in on country Victoria. Metros, I do enjoy, but I enjoy the country and provincial meetings more. And I think that's my small edge, and that's why I like concentrating on it.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think everybody's got an edge. There's not many people that just pick a number sort of thing. Yep. Everybody's got their, you know, their system or the why they think they're going to win. And that's what I mean sort of by edge. What is your edge? So actually understanding why you're going to win or why you think you're going to win, I think is very important. Just thinking logically about it is paramount to beating the bookies in the end. And I think that's the first step, is actually sitting down. Even if you write it out, like, why will I win? And if you can't get past that first bit, why you think you're going to win, well, you shouldn't be betting.
Once you've done that, how do you analyse whether your edge is going to be somewhat successful?
Well, you've got to test it. That's the you know, the plain and simple. You've got to test it. You can think, I think things plenty of times, favourites are getting beat. Look at all these well-backed favourites. Favourites are no good anymore. And then, at night I'll go back and I'll run analysis to go and look at it. More times than not, I'm wrong. Yep. It's just in your head. You get you get dirty on some things. You back up your favourites, and the punt sends you a bit crazy anyway. So it's amazing what when you do sit down and test it. And by test it, like, I run things through my database, and I understand a lot of people don't have the luxury of having a database. So what do you do then? You can paper test it. You can test bet it. So your trialist, for example, I know you're punting, but say you had a kept record. Records are very important, so I'd be keeping records.
Yep.
So if you've got, say, 2 years of, the horses that you like in the trial, go back, either compile them into an Excel spreadsheet or just write them out. Write them out with different. Maybe you're good at, it's two-year-olds, for example, and you're not good with the trialist for the older horses. Maybe you're good at identifying trialists that didn't win the trial but got further back in the trial. So test it by sort of test betting it. Either if you've got a great back testing system, that's the best way to do it, is testing the data. If I had have done this, what would my result have now been? If you don't have that, start keeping records and just writing down you the bets that you would have had and just seeing how you go.
And that's not like going to the races on a Saturday and everyone's been guilty of it over the time, and you can have how many bets through a day. You get wake up the next day and you don't even sort of remember what you had even backed or whatnot. This is about trying to be accountable and making yourself accountable for the bets
This is making yourself accountable for the edge that you think you've got, not for when you're down the pub having a couple.
Yep.
This is your actual edge, why you're going to win. Now let's see if it's actual reality or if it's just in your head. And another good way to do it is just bet small. Have a dollar on, $2, and just get a feel for it as well, and just run it for a month and just see whether it is actually returning a profit. But testing, unless you're testing what you're actually doing in some form, it's very hard to win. Even if you are winning and you aren't testing, you're probably not winning enough, because when I go back through my records, there's certain things like older horses first up. I don't win, sort of might be coming out as a bet, but if I back that type of horse, it's not showing a profit. When the rail's out sort of 12 metres plus, I struggle. First up horses, I just mentioned, are very hard to read. When the track's heavy, things change. So the more you can delve into your own sort of, your own system or your own edge, the more successful you are going to be.
Staking is the next point. Clearly that's an instrumental part of wagering and punting. What's your theories on staking?
Well, staking's huge. Well, my number one sort of point is you've got to stay in the game.
Yep.
It's no good knocking yourself out of the game, because we all love it, then you can't bet. So that's the worst thing that could ever happen. But so you've analysed your edge. You've got the bets as well. So you've planned out the bets. Maybe you've condensed that down where you've only got 5 or 10 bets a day, because your trial is maybe, you could do that Australia-wide, but you focus on just Victoria. So you've got your set of bets that you want to have. Staking now is bank size dependent, obviously. I would suggest to bet to win about 5% of your bank and risk about 2% of your bank. The way I stake, I bet to win a certain amount with a maximum amount on the horse, and a maximum amount on the race. So say I might bet to win, call it $1,000, right? I'm betting to win $1,000. My maximum bet is usually about 50%. So my maximum bet's $500. And for that race, so if I have two bets in that race, I'll only invest $500 on that race as well. So I'll reduce them back to 200 or 300 or whatever it may be. So it adds up to $500. So I'm betting to win, not to collect, but I'm betting to win $500. So on Wolfden, the question I get asked most about is staking. But I'm all about betting to win a certain amount rather than a level stake. I find with a level stake, you're having too much on the longer priced horses. And the variance as well, which is one thing that you can discover as well if you test more deeply, is the variance or the, you know, the roller coaster that we all love on the punt, how to handle that as well. So, but staking, you know, without correct staking, and also some people stake, it's not all about staking too big. Some people stake too small and then they can't kick as well. You need to give yourself a chance to, if you want to go to the next level, you need to pick your mark a bit. And sometimes I think overstaking is good.
How long did that take for you to sort of identify? I know it's sort of developed over a long time, but when did you sort of feel your staking was right?
Probably late 20s. Yep. I went through a lot of different, you know, I'm always, you know, attacking. Yep. I want to bet too big. I learned a lot of hard lessons as well about knocking myself out of play when I was early as well. Like I went to 40 and knocked it off 40. Yeah. And that's because I was betting too big and I wasn't staking correctly. But I think there is an element there of staking where, and it's usually on a longer price horse. If you see a great opportunity at 20-1 and you know this is the wrong price, well, attack it, double your stake, have maybe 500 on it, and then look to sort of either back other horses in the race if it's you know going to come into $7 or $8. Or lay it back on the exchange and get your half stake back out of it as well. So there's great opportunities to overstake sometimes as well. Not all the time, but especially on longer priced horses.
Bet placement and odds, that's your sort of 4 points. What are you determined by that?
Well, that's, the way you place the bets, the return that you're getting, you know, for your selections will determine whether you win or not. So I've seen plenty of, you know, judges that are 100 times better than me, but they don't know how to gamble. They don't know how to get the return. So we might be backing the same horses. I'm getting $2.20. They're getting $1.80. I'm ending up winning at the end of the day. They aren't. But, you know, the way that you place your bets will determine whether you win or whether you lose. And it's a really understated nowadays. So back when I was growing up at the track, it was all about odds. Probably when you start as well, it's all about the odds. Oh, what odds you get? Yep. No one ever asks what odds you get. It's nowadays, it's sort of...
Who wins?
Yeah.
Or, can you tip me a winner? And that's it.
Yeah. And what have you got in your second or third leg of your multi? So it's just about getting the best return. So how do you get the best return and what's the best way to place bets? For me, there are a lot of, especially like the market nowadays is designed to the smaller to medium-sized punter. It's hard betting at scale nowadays. So if you're a smaller punter especially, you can get best of the best with a few bookmakers. You can get top fluck, which is great for horses, $5 or less. You can get best tote with SP, which is good for the roughy horses. You can get Betfair SP for smaller bets, which doesn't affect the actual Betfair SP, which is great for horses that are 20-1 and over. You can get odds boosts, you can get price guarantees, you can get blah, 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 blah. So utilize all those things. Don't have the mentality of, oh, if it wins, I'm happy. Because if you've taken $3 and you could have got $4, you've had $100 on it, you cost yourself money, and at the end of the year, that'll add up. And at the end of the year, that's the difference between sort of winning and losing.
Mental approach, we hear a lot about this and being in the right frame of mind to be successful. How do you stay in the right mental frame of mind?
I stay in the right, I'm naturally a very positive person, which helps. I'm always, when I bet, I always think I'm going to win. Not in a, you know, crazy way, I'm going to win, but in a way that, you know, I'm always confident. If I'm going through a bad run, I'm always confident I'm going to get out of that. So I think that the mental side of the game is the thing that stops the majority of punters from going to the next level. And that negative, you know, the negative thought that gets you, you know it, don't you?
Yeah.
That gets in the back of your mind, you know, what are you doing? You're an idiot, you're gambling, you can't win. You need to get that out. And the way that you do get that out is going back to step number one. Why am I going to win? Go to step number two. You know, go back through these steps and just staying very positive. I think exercise is a huge thing as well.
Which so like away from the actual sort of racing and watching videos and doing form, you need to have some sort of outlet of trying to look after yourself physically and being in the best shape possible.
I'm putting 7 days a week and, there's a lot of head noise going in and a lot of, it does do your head in. But it's, it's fun. And at the end of the day, we're playing a game.
Yeah.
I know it's a job and everything, but I get to watch races. I get to sit there watching sport. How good.
Stick with us here on The Art of the Punt. We're chatting with Kingsley Bartholomew. Welcome back to The Art of the Punt. Hope you're enjoying this chat with Kingsley Bartholomew. Kings, have you got any advice for punters who might have 4 or 5 bets for the day, but they don't know whether to back them on a Wednesday when the market comes out? Do they wait until Saturday? Do they wait until 2 minutes before the jump? Is there an optimal time to place your bet on a particular horse?
Well, it's a $1 million question, really, and I struggle with that myself. I'm looking at it, like Mornington Glory on the weekend. I was looking at 310, going, oh, geez, I think that's such a great price, and then I waited, I ended up taking 290 and 280. But it is the $1 million question. My advice, with the way the market is nowadays, with 125 to 130 early percentage markets, is just wait. Just wait and utilise those products that I spoke about before, your best of the best, your top fluck, your best of three totes with SP, all those other beautiful
incentives, promotions that the bookmakers and generosities that they're giving out these
that's
days.
That's it. But I'm a big advocate for putting your bets on at the start of the day. So pick your bets before race one, unless you have the ability to sit there and, look at track bias, which, you're watching the kids play sport, you're going out for lunch with the wife, you're doing this and doing that. But I'd put them on at the start of the day and I'd set your staking. So you might be betting to win $200, maximum bet of $100. Go through, how much you might have, $300 to bet with for the day or whatever it is. Put that on, forget about it. Go out, do what you got to do, watch the races. And you got under no pressure then, and you're getting the best price, getting the best returns.
What was the biggest bet or the biggest sort of gamble you've had?
The biggest bet I've had was on Black Caviar when she won the 2011 Newmarket. I had over 300,000 on her at $1.20.
And so you weren't scared to take the short price?
Winx. I back Black Caviar and Winx a lot. And in particular, Black Caviar, because I love horses that race on pace that aren't going to have any interference. And when she was down the straight, then I just sort of thought, how can she get beat? She's so much faster than it. And she continually come up on my system for that reason. Just the top speed and the sustained speed that she could run was just out of this world. A lot of people would look at $1.10, $1.08, and it didn't worry me. I'd just still take it. And as we know, it's 25 from 25. I mean, they can get beat, but a horse like that is just so special. Winx as well. Like, Winx nearly got rolled a few times, but I actually didn't like Winx when she won the first Cox Plate. But after that, her figures just really went through the roof, and I probably backed her about like 15 times in a row.
What do you see of the future of the game? You're still very passionate about it. It doesn't sound like you're ready to wind up anytime soon.
I hope not. You've just got to adapt. I'll just keep trying to improve my form, which I need to do. I need to always, which I'll continually always try and get better. I'll just continue to try and get better. I think there's a lot more opportunity nowadays in the country races. Everyone wants to focus on, Saturday metros at Flemington, but I'd rather be looking at it Wodonga on a Saturday trying to find a bit of value there rather than the limits are still the same, the percentages are still the same, and I think that's where the value lies on a Monday at a Chuka or whatever it may be, rather than trying to pick the Melbourne Cup winner, which is, what we want to do. But if we're trying to make money, it's more so focusing on those country races. But I think where's it going? I think punting professionally will continue to get harder as bookies get smarter and the markets sort of shrink, especially with the way the taxation is nowadays.
Well, thanks, Kingsley. It's been an enjoyable chat.
Thank you.
Good luck on the punt.
Thanks.
Chances are you're about to lose. For free and confidential support, call the number on the screen or visit the website.